from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Muslim Indonesia, President Bush has been honoring Islam again in the past 24 hours, working to calm fear and anger toward the United States and the Islamic world. But back home, the Pentagon has launched an investigation of one of its top officers for casting the war against terror in starkly religious terms. General William G. Jerry Boykin has been addressing evangelical Christian audiences with tales of battling a, quote, spiritual enemy in the name of Jesus. News of Boykin's depictions of combating Satan and an idol-worshipping Islamic enemy have enraged Muslims abroad. Pressure for his reassignment or resignation is growing among Republicans and Democrats. So far, General Boykin has apologized but is still standing. Tonight on Point, religion, war, and the fate of General William Boykin. We begin with word of how the general's comments have been received in the Arab world. Khalid Al-Maina is editor of the Arab News, based in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and the largest English-language daily newspaper in the Middle East. I asked him how widely and prominently Boykin's remarks are being reported on in the Arab world.
Well, at least in Saudi Arabia and the adjoining countries, it was very widely reported. There was extensive coverage. There was a sense of alarm. People were a bit worried that his words might be really approved by the majority of the Americans, or by at least those people whom he talked to. At a time when we are trying to patch up things, and at a time when we are trying to focus on bettering the relations between the Arab and the Islamic world in America after the unfortunate and tragic incident of September 11, this type of talk has not helped. In fact, is damaging.
President Bush has repeatedly praised Islam and its peaceful followers. Doesn't that overshadow the remarks of one general?
Well, it does. But, you know, people remember what they heard last. While President Bush may be sincere in his effort to see that there's no division, unfortunately, there are many people in the administration and in the media who take delight in Islam bashing. And it's unfortunate that we also, Islam is an extension of Judaism and Christianity, because we are the believers in Abraham, Moses, and Jesus, and try to divest us from that culture and heritage and try to demonize us, I think is a very sad thing.
But the suggestion here is that when a U.S. general speaks in this way, it may inflame a kind of religious war dynamic. Do Arab Muslims take the idea of religious war with the United States here seriously? I mean, after all, the U.S. has been criticized in Muslim quarters for being godless, for being too secular.
Well, in certain elements, yes, you have extremists everywhere. In fact, I was attending a conference today, and we were talking about the same thing. What is upsetting, and I, as a liberal, am upset, is the application of the principle of collective guilt on all of us, Muslims or Arabs. There are extremists everywhere. There are people who commit murder. But by trying to sort of putting us all under one umbrella, you are doing a disservice to humanity, because you are dividing people rather than striving to sort of get them together, especially in a very divided world.
But is General Boykin's language so offensive to Muslims who hear their own religious leaders, at least as we hear it reported, talk about attacking the infidel?
Well, I don't think so. These are, at least the general is an official. I have never heard of an imam of the Grand Mosque or the rector of Al-Azhar University say that. There might be some deviants in the Muslim world, but they have no official standing. They are cults like Charles Manson and or others. But this general represents the U.S. government, or at least is a man in uniform. And for him to say that, I think, is very offensive.
Khalid Al-Maina, General Boykin says that his remarks were taken out of context, that he was speaking to not Islam at large, but speaking about extremists. And in them, he saw something really bad, something that he calls Satan. Is that a distinction that Muslims are willing to make when they read what they read from him?
Well, I don't. It's very easy to say that things are taken out of context. But what is worrying is if this there is one general like that, there may be others in the administration, and it's very sad because let me tell you one thing. Whatever you hear and read about is that people hate the United States. This is a lot of baloney. Most of the United States has never been an imperial power. It has never harmed the Muslim world. The United States was the largest donor of aid to the Muslim world. So how can we be? We hate the Americans. Yes, there are people who are upset with the United States because of their topsy-turvy foreign policy in the Middle East, because they're oblivious to the sufferings of the Palestinian people, but that's politics. But nobody hates. But for a general to say that, I think is very sad.
Khalid Al-Maina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Khalid Al-Maina is editor of the Arab News in Jeddah. He spoke with me from London. In June, Army Lieutenant General William Boykin was named the Pentagon's Deputy Undersecretary for Intelligence. His job includes working with governments of Islamic nations to track down, among others, Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. Since his religion-charged remarks came to light in reports by NBC News and the Los Angeles Times last week, pressure has grown in Washington for him to resign or be reassigned. What do you think? Should he stay or should he go? Can a top U.S. general put the war on terror in terms of Jesus and the devil and keep his post? Does that risk turning the war on terror into a religious war? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is John Diamond, Pentagon reporter for USA Today. Good evening and welcome, John Diamond.
Good evening to you.
It's great to have you. Also with me in the studio is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor of the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Hello, Tom.
John Diamond, take us into the Pentagon's and, I guess, Washington's broader contemplation of this. We see all kinds of mixed messages. There's some kind of investigation underway, we're told yesterday by Donald Rumsfeld. Today, word that a Defense Department spokesman is saying General Boykin will stay. New York Times is reporting unnamed senior congressional Republican officials saying no one thinks he'll survive. What's going on with General Boykin?
This is a situation that's very much in flux. I think the Pentagon was clearly caught by surprise, and presumably the research that it did in this nomination did not encompass the specifics of what he had said in these various appearances in Christian churches. And right now, the word from Capitol Hill is that both Senator Warner, a Republican from Virginia, and Senator Levin, Democrat from Michigan, the two top members of the Senate Armed Services Committee, believe he should be temporarily reassigned until this is all sorted out. That's heavy-duty pressure on the Bush administration. The president in Asia today basically said that he made it clear to his interlocutors that he did not agree with the general's comments, that they did not reflect the administration point of view. Even the notion that an intelligence official has a strong point of view is in itself problematic because, of course, intelligence analysis is supposed to be essentially dispassionate in order to be effective. And the general comes across as anything but that.
John Diamond, can you give us a little bit of the background of William, or Jerry as he's known, Boykin? He's a very highly decorated background in special operations, is that right?
Background in special operations, the super secret Delta Force. His missions include the hostage rescue, the aborted hostage rescue mission during the Carter administration, and interestingly, actually, two rather disastrous missions, that one as well as the 1993 Mogadishu, Somalia episode where they were going after Mohammed Farah Aidid, one of the local militia leaders, and it turned into an enormous firefight that resulted, I believe it was 18 Army Rangers were killed. That episode was rather glorified in the movie Black Hawk Down, mm-hmm. but the professionals who looked at it regarded it as somewhat of a fiasco in terms of the way that mission was organized. The intelligence on it was terribly handled. The opposition forces knew the Americans were coming. It was an ambush. The use of helicopters in an urban warfare environment was a disaster.
But it made a big impression on General Boykin. He still talks a lot about it. In fact, that time in Mogadishu is at the heart of his comments in these repeated appearances he's made. And what about the role that he plays now in the intelligence arena? Have we got it right that that puts him basically in charge of finding bin Laden and Saddam Hussein?
His particular assignment is heavily involved in those missions. He has one civilian defense official, Stephen Cambone, over his head, and then Defense Secretary Rumsfeld on top of that. This is a new intelligence bureaucracy that the Pentagon has created to provide the Secretary of Defense with his own essentially line of intelligence analysis that would potentially rival or compete with analysis coming from other parts of the intelligence community, such as the CIA. And the Defense Department, of course, already consists of includes an enormous intelligence gathering apparatus, the spy satellites, the eavesdropping satellites, and so forth. But now it is organized under this assistant secretariatship, which Boykin would be the number two official in. And this is a new sort of analysis and threat warning shop that goes directly to the Secretary of Defense.
Let me ask you then, John, Donald Rumsfeld, though he was sort of dodging on General Boykin yesterday, this memo of his that he sent to people in the Defense Department is out in the last 24 hours,
yes.
Rather critical of success in the war on terror, and specifically talking about how wondering aloud in this memo whether radical Muslim clerics are recruiting, training, and deploying new recruits faster than the United States can deal with them. He's saying we've got to look into how to close down the flow of recruits.
That's right.
Don't General Boykin's comments, aren't they exactly the kind of comment from an American military official that might increase that flow of recruits? Couldn't they be interpreted as being at odds with U.S. national security efforts here?
There's no question about it that they're at odds, and the Bush administration itself has already made clear that they're very much at odds. Now, it's understood, and Secretary Rumsfeld has made the point, that people are free to have their own views, but the idea that an official in an intelligence gathering and analysis position, someone who's supposed to be giving the Secretary of Defense his best advice on what's going on in the Muslim world, what's going on among Islamic radicals, how best to confront the threat that they pose, would have very sort of polarized views, very religiously oriented views, while trying to analyze intelligence. It's a major problem. I find it personally hard to understand that a person who's an intelligence analyst could look at a photograph of Mogadishu and see the sign of the devil over the city. Of course, one of the things that intelligence professionals do is look at spy satellite photos and surveillance photos and try to get information.
John, very quickly, let me ask you, how widespread, or do you have any idea, are General Boykin's religious views among the U.S. military brass? Is this common? Do we have a very kind of evangelically oriented military brass? Is it unusual in that regard or not?
I think he's unusual. I think that the demographic surveys of the military have found a preponderance of Republicans. There's certainly a preponderance, I think, of Protestants. The military is heavily represented across the South by both African-American and Caucasian-American members, strong.
So you see him as outside the norm in that way?
I think it's fair to say he's outside the norm, although, again, it's not so much that his views in and of themselves are shocking. It's that they are problematical in that prominent a position.
John Diamond, our time's short, but we thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
John Diamond is Pentagon reporter for USA Today. Jack Beatty, the Pentagon's got a problem in its lap here.
It has, and this appointment belongs to a series of Orwellian appointments that have been made in regard to Arab matters. First of all, Jay Garner was named as our first administrator in Baghdad. He was one of the people who brought the Arrow missile system to Israel. He had bit very close ties, said very good things about Ariel Sharon. That's neither bad nor good. it's inflammatory in the Arab world, and there are other examples I want to return to.
We'll come back and look at those, Jack. We're talking tonight about religion, war, and whether General William Boykin should resign for appearing to call Islam satanic. What do you think? Should he stay or should he go? And can a top U.S. general in uniform put war in terms of Satan and Jesus and stay at his post? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about religion, war, and whether General William Boykin should resign for appearing to call Islam satanic. You can join the conversation. Are General Boykin's religious convictions his own to express as he likes, or are they too costly to U.S. national security interests? And what do you, what should the Islamic world make of General William Boykin's remarks? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have a lot of people to talk to tonight. It's going to be an interesting conversation. Jack Beattie, we had to interrupt you in the middle of your list there, though, of appointments. Take us on.
Yeah, I was just trying to point out how this isn't quite so aberrant as it seems if you start to look at this, some of the appointments the Bush administration has made. Just yesterday, a man named Wormser, I believe it's David, I apologize for not having the first name. I read his things at 6 o'clock this morning. But he was appointed to the vice president's staff on terrorism. Well, he was the author, one of the authors of a report in the 90s to the Likud party in Israel that basically called for breaking up the Arab states and reducing Arabi into its tribal basis. That's hardly the kind of, you know, that again, that may be good policy, but it's hardly calculated to be.
But it's not an attack on Islam. It could be a calculation that these are politically unviable states that are destined to be endlessly at conflict. And
could it could indeed, but it's a very hard line.
Yeah.
Second, the appointment of Daniel Pipes to the board of directors of the Institute of Peace, which is mandated to promote peace and curb violence, really to bridge differences between groups. This was a recess appointment because it was unlikely. It didn't look like the Senate was going to approve it. Mm-hmm. And it was made just about 6 weeks ago. And it is Orwellian because Mr. Pipes's career, I think any fair reading of it, people should just dial him up on the web as I just did, would have to come to the conclusion that he was an opponent and a strong, he was strongly hostile to the Islamic faith, or at least to whole segments of it. Let me just read one of his statements. He says, "To me, every fundamentalist Muslim, no matter how peaceable in his behavior, is part of a murderous movement and thus in some fashion a foot soldier in the war that bin Laden has launched against civilization." And he says this, he's speaking here, he says, about something like 200 million people. And he said, "America must begin a process of confrontation with 10-15% of the vast populations of the Muslim world." Again, he's been appointed to this bridge-building group, and his whole career is full of comments that may be accurate but are unquestionably inflammatory. And finally, Franklin Graham, who said that Islam is a wicked religion bent on world domination, he was invited to give the Good Friday homily at the Pentagon this year. Why do that?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, you want people speaking their mind. You want to know what people actually think. But there's another effort going on here. President Bush has been the most prominent in trying to reach out and build bridges, not build just confrontation here. Jack, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation John Esposito. He joins us from Washington, D.C. He's director of the Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding at Georgetown University, author of What Everyone Should Know About Islam, Questions and Answers. Good evening and welcome, John Esposito.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. John, you have no doubt read and observed General Boykin's comments in some detail. How do you parse out here? This is a top U.S. general speaking in uniform at pulpits around the country. On the one hand, he's an American with a right to the religious views that he likes. On the other hand, he's a very high-ranking military official. How do you sort all this out?
Well, I think that you're right. He's entitled to any opinion he wants, including any theological opinion. Although I have to say that his knowledge of Christian theology is extremely flawed, but that's really not the issue. The real question is, in terms of his appointment in terms of the government, and from a strategic point of view, in terms of the Bush administration, it's absolutely disastrous. It undermines what the president has said consistently, and that is distinguishing between Islam and Muslim extremism. However, what it does also underscore is the fact that although the president takes that position consistently, in fact, the people who work for him seem to, you know, continuously wind up creating what looked like contradictory evidence.
But General Boykin apologized on Friday to those who were offended. And he said, you know, there was a context for this, and my remarks are being taken out of context. I wasn't slamming Islam in general. I was in a specific situation in Mogadishu, in Somalia. He was talking about Osman Atto, a kind of warlord who was fighting there. He said he wasn't saying that all Muslims worshipped idols. Of course, Islam is founded in opposition to idolatry. He was saying that this one bad guy, in to use President Bush's phrase, in Mogadishu, he worshipped money and power, that was the idolatry, that he was corrupt, that he wasn't following Islam. Do these distinctions matter, these clarifications?
Oh, I don't think they do, because I think that it runs far beyond that, and I think the general knows that. The reports that I've seen talk about talks that he has given in Christian churches, in uniform, saying, you know, roughly the same kinds of things about Islam. Also, on the other hand, having said that, you know, referring to, you know, using language like we are in the army of God and the house of God and the kingdom of God, seeing himself as a warrior, saying that, you know, the important thing isn't that George Bush was not elected by a majority of the voters in the United States, but that he was appointed by God. He's in the White House because God put him there. You know, for the president, trying to say that this is a war against global terrorism, and to counter the belief in many parts of the Arab and Muslim world that this is a war against Islam and the Muslim world, this doesn't look good, because the general is speaking the language of a Christian jihad, and he sounds as extremist as Muslim extremists and terrorists do in terms of their language.
John Esposito, Jack, standby. I want to welcome into our conversation Billy McCormick. He joins us from Shreveport, Louisiana. He's a national board member of the Christian Coalition. Good evening and welcome, Billy McCormick.
Well, good evening, and happy to be with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. You have no doubt read, as we have, and perhaps seen the video as well, of General Boykin's remarks.
I have indeed.
And what do you make of them? Is he inflammatory here? Is he pumping up a religious war? How do you interpret what he said, Billy McCormick?
I think he was right on the ball. He did a great job. I think that he is saying it exactly as it is. And it's too bad that the liberals, the politically correct crowd, just can't take it. They are salivating all over themselves in gigantic celebrations, saying, we got him now. And this is a man who has been in war, a decorated veteran, saying what he believes. And the liberals, because they don't agree with him, think that he is Satan himself.
Well, let me ask you, Billy McCormick, how exactly do you interpret it? When you say he's right on the button here, right on the mark, are you saying that this war on terror should be cast in terms of religious war or something else?
Well, I would have imagined that those 19 guys that killed 3,000 Americans, they were doing it in the name of Allah. They were religious warriors. Seems like a war to me.
A Christian Islam war, a war between Christianity and Islam.
The Christians did not attack Islam. Islam radicals attacked America, if you remember.
We recall very vividly what happened on September 11th, 2001. But Billy McCormick, if we go down this road, where does it lead? Does this require an apocalyptic standoff between these two religions with billion-plus members in each?
It does require us to look at it realistically rather than through the lens of some liberal who doesn't know which ends up.
Excuse me for a minute, but it seems
John Esposito.
To me that the reverend seems to be in direct contradiction with his own president, who's drawn a sharp distinction between Islam and what Muslim extremists do. Just as it seems to me, I would think that the reverend would like to see one draw a sharp distinction between what Christian extremists do, whether they do it in Northern Ireland or in Serbia or other parts of the world, and with mainland Christianity.
I have no portfolio for those guys. The fact is, we're not talking about those guys, and they've been put to rest pretty well. But we're talking about the guys who came over here and killed 3,000 Americans. They were Islamic fundamentalist radical folks who were bent upon beating up on great Satan America.
Absolutely right. But that's different than saying that is what mainstream Islam represents. Just as you would say the same thing with regard to Christian extremists who commit their actions. And it seems to me that if you don't say that, then at least you have to say that you think that President Bush is misguided in his policy.
I think that the press is beating up on President Bush. This is Bush bashing indirectly. And those who despise Mr. Bush, as most of the left-leaning secular fundamentalist media, get a great delight in beating up the president, and they're doing it indirectly here. Through their persecution of this general.
Billy McCormick, President Bush has been very out front ever since very soon after September 11th in holding out a hand to peaceable Muslims.
That's right. So am I.
But is it not possible that when you put it in terms of Satan...
Well, this general did the same thing, didn't he? He didn't blame all Islam.
Well, he says so in retrospect, but of course, the way it's being interpreted is something else again.
Yeah, the interpretation by these liberals that you just trotted out there, who are salivating all over themselves in their pious platitudes, they can't get enough of it.
Billy McCormick, we've got your perspective loud and clear, and we thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes, you're welcome.
Billy McCormick, National Board Member with the Christian Coalition. He spoke to us there from Shreveport, Louisiana. I want to turn to our call. Sultan is calling from Salem, Massachusetts. Hi, Sultan. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was just, wondering, I don't know if his resignation will matter much, either way, because he's not the problem. He's a symptom of the problem that we also see in Muslim countries day and night. These are madrasas that produce these people. These are newspapers. But when it comes over here, we don't see that. These are the talk radios, clear channel, 200,000, whatever number of radios, the day and night bashing Islam or Billy Frank or, these are...
But, Sultan, let me ask you, Billy McCormick, who we just spoke with, was saying General Boykin is trying to point to a violent fundamentalist minority within the Muslim faith, and that's what he's calling evil.
Right, but I'm saying is, when we make that distinction, this way, very fine distinction, like we say neocons, but if they were Muslim, they will be fundamentalist terrorists, because look at these names, Paul Wolfowitz or... Michael Dean or Elliot Abrams, these all people who are very close ties and friendship with Ariel Sharon and Benjamin Netanyahu and the far right,
But they're entitled to have those relationships.
Names. These are the people who pick up Daniel Pipe, and we give them nice names. Oh, and they are neocons, but if they were Muslim, they would be fundamentalists, they're terrorists, go to the school, close their schools, close their books, this and that. But when it comes over here, we don't look at, what is the culture of producing these? This culture that Mr. McCormick is saying, extremist culture.
Sultan, we've got it, and thanks very much for the call. Hamid is calling from Westport, Massachusetts. Hamid,
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Actually, I have the same view as Sultan has. Pretty much, I'm actually blaming media for producing this kind of people, pretty much, in here.
You think the U.S. media is producing leaders like General Boykin?
Exactly. I mean, the way I can see it, I've seen media back home in Iran, and I see media back here, too. I mean, they're pretty much the same. Both of them are the mouthpiece of the government. They're repeating whatever the government says. And actually, even I've seen it on your own show, that pretty much you're pretty much biased against whatever...
Against Islam.
Yes, exactly.
Hmm. Hmm. We take that on board. Hamid, thanks for your call. John Esposito, I'm beginning to get a little confused here in the welter of perspectives, but it seems to me that doesn't this come back to the big relationship between Islam and the United States and whether it can be pulled out of a kind of endless conflict dynamic?
Well, I think so. I think that what's unfortunate is that on the one hand, when the Prime Minister of Malaysia, Mr. Mahathir, made his reprehensible comments about Jews a while ago.
Well, just a couple of days ago, or I guess last week now, President Bush upbraided him for those, essentially.
And his spokesman went out of the way to address it. And yet, it took until today for the president to make any comment about what the general said. And the reason why it's problematic is that the president has been very consistent in making the distinction that I refer to. But the fact is that in the Arab and Muslim world, and indeed in many parts of the world, France has written a series of articles on a concern about to what extent does the Christian right control American politics and does religion influence the president. The fact is that the president had used the word crusade, apologize. The Pentagon used the phrase infinite justice. Then Franklin Graham, who, remember, had spoken at the inauguration of the president and twice said Islam was evil, not Muslim extremists are evil, and refused to back away from that, was then invited to speak at Easter time on Good Friday at the Pentagon. And the response of the Pentagon was, well, we're simply responding to what our constituency want. Now, when the general makes his statement, you can see how a lot of people out there are going to look and say, well, wait a minute, this seems to all tie together very neatly. And I think that, therefore, it becomes very important that the administration respond. The fact is, when the general statements first came out, no senior member of the administration took that on squarely. The Rumsfeld attempted to kind of simply push it to the side, as well as leaders of the Pentagon, and say, well, it's really not relevant what he said, and this is a great general. The fact is, the man certainly privately is entitled to have any position he wants, but he is, when he's in uniform, when he's speaking as a general, he is a representative of the United States of America.
Jack Beatty, General Boykin says, the enemy will be defeated only if we come against them in the name of Jesus. I mean, things can quickly, very quickly slip into the dynamic of religious war here.
Yes. I mean, you know, our friend Mr. McCormick said he believes these things sincerely. There's no doubt about it. But sincerity and wisdom are really often two different things. And just it is monstrously impolitic to allow him to say that without and to remain in office, it seems to me, unless there are some tremendously extenuating circumstances. And you have to ask why. Why would there even be a moment's delay about it? Why the Daniel Pipes appointment? Why Franklin Graham? Why General Garner? Well, you know, I'm. It's no secret that that the re-election strategy of Karl Rove, he said it, is to draw the maximum from the religious base of the Republic, the fundamentalist base of the Republican Party. He felt that in the 2000 election, they could have got 4 million votes out of that base. Now, if they had got even half of those, that would have been a huge victory for Mr. Bush. And that, you know, one view of the Bush policy since then has been, not only are we not going to lose any of these people, we're going to make every gesture we can to keep them on board. As we heard from Mr. McCormick, who represents them, he couldn't be more enthusiastic about this general.
So you're saying President Bush, or there's a political calculation here, saying I'm not going to dispute what General Boykin said because many Americans in a fundamentalist Christian base of mine agree with him.
Well, at least a reluctance to confront him. I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. I mean, perhaps the president will say this. Let's hope he does.
Well, he's already said that he disagreed with the general. We're talking tonight about religion, war, and whether General William Boykin should resign for appearing to call Islam satanic. Do General Boykin's comments wipe out the careful work of President Bush to embrace peace-loving Muslims? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about religion, war, and whether General William Boykin should resign for appearing to call Islam satanic. You can join the conversation tonight. Is there a risk of turning the war on terror into a religious war? Is it one already? And are domestic politics letting General Boykin damage global U.S. efforts to stop terrorism? We're at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined now from Chevy Chase, Maryland, by Reverend Barry Lind. He's executive director of the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Good evening and welcome, Barry Lind.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
What's the dynamic that you see at work? You watch these church and state issues very closely. Is this a real outrider or something more general going on, Barry Lind?
No, it's very serious. And I think that unlike Billy McCormick, who I do know reasonably well, I think he's dead wrong. I think there's been incalculable damage done already to American foreign policy and American military policy, for that matter. Think about it this way. All of those videotapes that all of us saw on NBC last week are now being shown, I'm sure, or will be by next week, in all of the terrorist training camps that are training another generation of extremists who happen to be Islamic in the ways of the United States.
Fareed Zakaria wrote in Newsweek this week, a few more of these and Osama bin Laden won't need to make videos anymore.
No, absolutely. In fact, this just confirms on video, in uniform, a United States Army general saying this is, in fact, a holy war. And frankly, his excuses are preposterous when he explains that he meant idols. He only meant that this man was greedy. That's clearly not what he said within the context of the overall sermonette that he was giving at the time. He wants to turn this into a crusade. As far as the First Amendment arguments that are being made, and I'm certainly a First Amendment absolutist, but when it comes to a military person doing the military job, you are not supposed to be contravening the position of the commander-in-chief. You're not supposed to be characterizing a war in a different way than the commander-in-chief has done it. And the only thing that, of course, troubles many people, including some of your guests, is if the president doesn't believe this, then why in the world is General Boykin not removed to another position? He does not need to be deputy undersecretary.
We heard Jack Beatty's answer to that. He said there may be a political calculation here. Do you agree?
Well, there could be a political calculation because you've already seen the circling of the wagons around the most outrageous possible statements by people like Pat Robertson and Billy McCormick and other leaders of the Christian right. So we're already seeing it. The president does, in fact, and as someone pointed out, Karl Rove said he's looking for 2 million more votes from evangelical Christians in the next presidential election. He's terribly afraid of that. It's always a part of the calculation. But he also, one would think, to be a responsible president and commander-in-chief, would also be concerned about what the impact of this is on the war on terrorism.
Mary Lynn, do you see an erosion in the wall between church and state here in the U.S.?
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, this is a president not only who General Boykin believes was appointed by God to serve, but Mr. Bush has himself told the Secretary of Commerce, Don Evans, that he was selected. He thinks he was selected by God, not apparently by Chad, to be the president of the United States. So we already have a president who thinks that way. We already have members of Congress who speak in essentially religious terms when they're making policy decisions. Tom DeLay, certainly the most powerful member of the House of Representatives, has said that he views all legislation within his Christian worldview because it's the only appropriate one. So these are not people who are modestly interested in their faith or even...
But a Christian worldview is hardly... A Christian worldview is hardly a sinful thing to have.
No, it's not a sinful thing to have, but unfortunately for Mr. DeLay, the Constitution says he's supposed to be making judgments in Congress not based on his religion, but in fact based on the Constitution and laws of the United States. So it is his impetus, it's his motive to kind of Christianize legislation in the same way that a lot of people in the Muslim world, and not only extremists, believe that there is an effort on the part of the United States not to democratize places like Iraq, but to Christianize places like Iraq. Mm. No wonder they're so angry.
Barry Lynn, thanks very much for joining
us
tonight. Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. John Esposito, Jack Beatty, stand by. A lot of callers want to join us. Rick is calling from Gays Mills, Wisconsin. Hi, Rick. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom, Jack, and now I lost Barry Lynn, but help me. I feel I'm being dragged by Billy McCormick and General Boykin and George Bush and Tom DeLay and the 19 hijackers into a religious struggle. I think that what General Boykin has said reflects what he really feels and what a tremendous number of the current people who have the levers of power in their hands feel. And that's not safe for the rest of us or the world. They could be driven by ideologies to do some rather monumental things like the stupid hijackers did.
Rick, let me ask you, I don't know how old you are, Rick, but have you ever had in your lifetime, have you had this feeling before of the United States, getting a kind of religious tinge about it at the highest official levels?
I truly haven't, and I'm not that young. Not in the way I feel it today, and it's very scary. I want a government that's that's free from religious ideology when it makes its decisions. That makes its decisions, you know, that views this as a police action, not as a religious struggle.
An apocalyptic one, potentially, at that. Rick, thanks so much for your call. John Esposito, how about it? What is the risk of this being turned, whether people want it turned or not, into a religious war? Is there too much? Is that hyperventilating to imagine that as a possibility, or is it already on?
Well, I think the problem is that every time you want to say that, well, we're not quite there, something like this comes along, and I think that's really the issue. I mean, a number of your other participants have pointed out statements that have been made by a variety of people, Tom DeLay, the president himself, in a number of contexts, and it reinforces a concern. And again, I really want to emphasize this. It's not just a concern in the Arab and Muslim world. It's a concern in other parts of the world where people look at the United States, who admire the United States, and see it as a model of a modern, democratic, secular nation. And suddenly, they're seeing a lot of its leaders who seem to be in policy situations injecting their particular faith and wonder, you know, what's happening in America, let alone people in the Arab and Muslim world. And again, not just the extremists, you know, but the mainstream. And I think we want to think to ourselves, how would we feel if a comparable statement were attributed to an Arab general, a very senior Arab or Muslim general? What kinds of conclusions would we draw in that?
Well, let me ask you about that, John, because I think the impression that many Americans have is that, in fact, a lot of high-ranking Arab or Muslim officials do have the sort of mirror image view of the world from General Boykin here.
Well,
is that entirely wrong?
I think that, I mean, clearly there are some Arab and Muslim generals who, you know, who would have, you know, a similar position.
I mean, we hear talk about infidels and
I'd have to say, I mean, frankly, maybe they would express it privately, but most, you know, reputable senior military leaders in many of the countries that we normally deal with do not engage, certainly in their public discourse. I mean, we can't be sure of what their private discourse is, but in their public discourse, in the kind of language that was expressed here. But I think that what's really important here, too, is, and let's keep this in mind, when we look at the Arab and Muslim world, we tend to say, well, these are Muslim countries, etc. We expect that when people look at the United States, that they see the United States as primarily a secular democratic nation that, yes, has Judeo-Christian roots, but that is primarily a country that follows its key is from the Constitution, not one that is governed by, if you will, religious motives and incentives. And I think the general statements they don't even reflect the mainstream Christian perspective. His theology, as I said early on, is an extremely faulty theology in terms of mainstream Christianity and in terms of biblical theology.
John Esposito, it's always great to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yep.
John Esposito, director of the Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding at Georgetown University. Jack Beatty, we've got a pot boiling here.
Yes, but you know, on presidents and religion, go back and look at FDR's fireside chats. God is in there, and occasionally Jesus Christ is in there a lot. Presidents have talked about God for a long, long time. And our president, on September 17, 2001, at the Islamic Center of Washington, said, "The face of terror is not the true faith of Islam. That's not what Islam is all about. Islam is peace. These terrorists don't represent peace. They represent evil and war." Well, that's very much in contradiction with what General Boykin was saying.
But we've heard in America, God on our side before, but not necessarily in a situation where it could be interpreted as religious war quite so easily.
That's certainly true.
Jack, thanks for being with us tonight. Listeners, in a moment, why one Colorado newspaper decided not to cover the Kobe Bryant trial. This is On Point. On Monday, a judge in Eagle, Colorado, ordered basketball superstar Kobe Bryant to stand trial on charges that he sexually assaulted a 19-year-old hotel concierge. but you wouldn't have been able to read about the ruling in the nearby Aspen Daily News. The editor of the daily newspaper, with its circulation of 12,000, has decided that his paper will no longer be covering the Bryant trial. Rick Carroll and his colleagues have decided that the case is already getting too much media attention, and they will sit this story out. The decision has drawn the ire of journalists across the country, as well as the newspaper's owner, but Carroll is standing his ground. Here's Rick Carroll reading from the editorial published earlier this month, where he explained to readers why they will no longer be reading about the Kobe Bryant case in the Aspen Daily News.
The Aspen Daily News is ceasing its coverage of the Kobe Bryant rape case. Our only regret about this decision is that it has come a little late. But you can trust us on this. The media firestorm hasn't even heated up yet, so we're confident readers who want Kobe Bryant coverage can easily find the latest development through other newspapers, magazines, television, radio, or the Internet. Since the allegations against Bryant surfaced, the Daily News has published Associated Press stories about the case, as well as its own, and at least one contribution from a Veil writer. We've printed front-page articles on the case, and we've published inside reports under the local banner. But upon further reflection, as we watch story after story land inside our paper, we've come to a few conclusions. There are many great, talented journalists out there converging on the Eagle County Courthouse, notebooks and tape recorders at the ready, as satellite towers bristle over a platoon of broadcast trucks. These are talented people, and we believe their abilities could be put to far better use. And if you catch them in a reflective moment, they'll tell you the same thing. To observe a media pack of this size on the move doesn't suggest purpose. It feels more like a herd, perhaps even a mob. There are so many news outlets these days, from TV to radio to print and the Internet, that reporters are literally driven to get that juicy tidbit first, to get on the air or into print and scoop the other guy. That's the most important thing. The result is an endless stream of stories on every possible aspect of the case and a resulting amplification of its importance that goes far beyond the appropriate response. At the same time, that sheer wall of noise drowns out the more measured news judgment of many reporters and editors. The human element becomes secondary. The sad thing is that most of these reporters and editors know that there are stories out there that need to be told. Stories about people, stories about politics, stories about science, stories about education, stories that could really make a difference in people's lives. But as long as these reporters are tied up in the over-amplified minutiae of the Bryant case, those stories are going by the wayside. That's why the Daily News will no longer publish those daily stories about the minutiae of a court case that won't even start for several months. We're not going to add to that over-amplification, and perhaps the readers out there who feel the same way will enjoy reading a Kobe-less newspaper. Not that this policy is without a caveat or two. If a major break in the Kobe case emerges with strong relevance in the Roaring Fork Valley, that would merit coverage. And when a verdict or settlement is reached in the case, we'll print that. After all, this new policy is not meant as a statement about Bryant's guilt or innocence, nor is it a statement about the importance of the criminal case itself. It's about taking a few sticks of kindling out of a roaring fire. So until the verdict, for the next 6 or 7 months, the Daily News will no longer cover the Bryant case unless it pertains to his other court life, which can be found on the sports page.
Rick Carroll is the editor of the Aspen Daily News. Since that editorial was published, the newspaper has run no coverage of the Kobe Bryant case. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Julie Jupp, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and Tib Skog. With help from Sarah Cook, our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.